we are continuing to pursue a human rights-centered approach.
The United States sanctions three top North Korean officials. It's Wednesday, December 12th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a cold case suddenly heats up down under. The Huawei effect on trade talks. The business of Chinese fruit and Australian coal. India finds happiness. Gorillas caught cheating. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Three North Korean officials, including a close aide to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, have been sanctioned by the United States over rights abuses and censorship. They include a top official of the ruling Workers' Party Organization and Guidance Department, the director of the Propaganda and Agitation Department, and the state security minister. The sanctions announced by the Treasury Department involve asset freezes covered by U.S. jurisdiction and a ban on transactions with the Americans. The move comes just 3 days after the United States was stymied in the UN Security Council from bringing up North Korea's human rights record for a fifth time since a devastating Commission of Inquiry report was issued by the world body. The U.S. effort fell one vote short, gaining just 8 of the 15 members. Greg Scarlutti heads the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, and aboard a plane waiting to leave for Seoul, he says VOA's Victor Beatty tells him that the U.S. efforts go beyond U.N. sanctions, which focus on Pyongyang's nuclear and missile ambitions.
Based on our own U.S. legislation, we are going after human rights violators, including, of course, the head of the Propaganda and Agitation Department, had a branch of the North Korean government that's responsible for punishing North Koreans for seeking access to information from the outside world. This is a very positive development. We are continuing to pursue a human rights-centered approach. We have also experienced a little bit of a disappointment. We have been unable to once again place North Korean human rights on the agenda of the UN Security Council. But this type of development gives me hope that we will continue to pursue the human rights agenda.
Will this upset the rapprochement between the two Koreas and the U.S.?
Tough luck. What Kim Jong-un wants is security guarantees. The United States, whether you want to regard the United States as a constitutional republic or a liberal democracy, the United States is the leader of the free world, of liberal democracies. How can we guarantee the survival of a regime that's committing crimes against humanity? This sends a very strong signal. In order for progress to happen, the North Korean human rights record must improve.
What were these three accused of?
Well, there's a senior OGD official, the Organization and Guidance Department. If there's one agency of the North Korean regime that's all-powerful, that's the OGD, the eyes and ears of the regime. This is the one agency that acts as a filter between the supreme leader and the rest of North Korea, the rest of the world. It advises the supreme leader on policy guidance, punishes those who are perceived as not complying with policy guidance. Very senior propaganda and agitation department official has also been sanctioned. Of course, PAD is the tip of the spear of North Korean propaganda, and the year 2018 has seen some successes by North Korean propaganda. It is very important that we remember that the actual human rights situation has not changed. It's very important that we remember that these propaganda operations may have won Kim Jong-un some PR victories, but at the end of the day, this continues to remain a regime that's committing crimes against humanity pursuant to policies established at the highest level of the state.
The U.S. State Department said human rights abuses in North Korea remain among the worst in the world, including extrajudicial killings, forced labor, torture, prolonged arbitrary detention, rape, forced abortions, and other forms of sexual violence. In a commentary Tuesday, the North Korean state newspaper criticized a separate Trump administration decision last month to renew sanctions over alleged human trafficking, calling it an unpardonable political provocation. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China and United States discuss next stage of trade talks. Flight risk of Huawei CFO discussed at second day of bail hearing. China faces U.S. pressure to contain deadly fentanyl exports. Thai government lifts politics bans ahead of polls. Indonesia reforms seek to dissolve decades of land conflict. You'll find more on these stories, expanded coverage on VOA Asia Facebook, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australian police have charged a retired teacher with the murder of his wife, whose disappearance in 1982 has been featured in a globally popular crime podcast. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports on how the cold case was broken.
Lynette Dawson went missing 36 years ago from her home in Sydney. Her husband at the time, Chris Dawson, has previously denied killing the mother of his two children, saying she abandoned the family for a religious group. A podcast produced by the Australian newspaper called The Teacher's Pet has brought global attention to the case. It's been downloaded more than 28 million times since it began running in May. There have been two separate inquests into Lynette Dawson's disappearance. Both concluded that she was killed by a known person. In 2003, a coroner determined that her husband, a former teacher and rugby player, had sex with teenage students during their marriage. A 16-year-old girl moved into the Dawson family home just days after Mrs. Dawson vanished. It's reported that new testimony from the schoolgirl led to this week's arrest. The New South Wales State Police Commissioner Mick Fuller says fresh evidence has been crucial.
They were predominantly statements from witnesses that helped us tie pieces of the puzzles together. No doubt it will be a voluminous brief with enormous amount of evidence, and obviously there are a number of witnesses that will be called.
Experts say that the popularity of investigative podcasts can give justice to the voiceless or be a hindrance to a police inquiry if the material isn't balanced and impartial. Chris Dawson's lawyers say media coverage is likely to taint the case against him. Australian police deny the huge interest surrounding the Teacher's Pet podcast led to Mr. Dawson's arrest following a 3-year reinvestigation of the case. The 70-year-old suspect remains in custody. The body of his former wife has never been found. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's military government has lifted a ban on political activities it imposed when it seized power in a coup more than 4 years ago, an action taken in preparation for elections promised for early next year. Political gatherings of more than 5 people are now permitted. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Well, it looks like we've reached the middle of the week on VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today. Chinese and American negotiators Tuesday discussed a timetable for trade talks. It followed an agreement by Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping of China to impose a 90-day truce in their trade tariff battle. The U.S. is set to raise tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports from 10% to 25% next month. Meanwhile, in Vancouver, Canada is determining the fate of the chief financial officer of Chinese giant telecom Huawei, whether Meng Wanzhou should be granted bail for health reasons as she awaits extradition proceedings to face U.S. charges of sanctions violations. The arrest on December 1st has angered Beijing, which has demanded her immediate release. Philip Levy is a former Bush administration trade advisor, adjunct professor at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, and a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty he believes the Meng case will impact the trade talks.
Both the U.S. and the Chinese side have tried to say that this will have no effect, no appreciable effect on the trade talks that are going on. I find that somewhat hard to believe that there'd be no effect whatsoever. My understanding is that the Chinese are quite upset about this and that will come out one way or the other.
This has really roiled the markets worldwide.
I think this has helped roil the markets. I think you've had a number of things where markets had initially assumed that all was well after the Trump and Xi summit. And I think we've had a series of revelations since which have cast doubt on this. And the fact that at U.S. request, the CFO of Huawei was getting arrested almost at the same time that the leaders were meeting may have been sort of the coup de grace.
What happened following the Xi-Trump meeting in Buenos Aires?
A number of things happened. So first, there were notable discrepancies between what President Trump had said was agreed in the meeting and what the Chinese were describing in the meeting. And then you started getting discrepancies between what part of the Trump White House said and what another part of the Trump White House said. So the idea that there was a clear plan to defuse the dispute started to look more and more dubious.
At the same time, a Chinese court Monday ordered a ban on iPhone sales in a patent dispute. Do you see any linkage at all?
There's no obvious linkage, and to my knowledge, they didn't claim any linkage. It also gets a little bit complicated because that was something that was done at the request of one U.S. company that hurt another U.S. company because it was part of an intellectual property dispute. I think it is a useful reminder that for anyone who thought that the limit to China's response was how many imports they could put tariffs on, there's a lot more that China can do should they choose to.
Because of China's practices, many countries, not just the U.S., are really alarmed at Chinese technology companies like ZTE and Huawei getting involved in future networking in these countries. Where does this go?
I think this is a real problem for the Chinese. They've, for a long time, wanted to establish national brands. And I think now they may be starting to understand that part of what they need with a brand identity is they need to have people feel comfortable with those companies and have people think that those companies are operating on a commercial basis, not on behalf of the Chinese government. I don't think you have that level of comfort at the moment with Huawei and ZTE.
Philip Levy described U.S.-China relations as seriously troubled. He said the 90-day time frame for resolving their trade differences is insufficient and worries the two countries are on a path to ever higher trade barriers. He said part of the problem is the Trump administration has not articulated a vision of what winning the dispute looks like. Meng faces up to 30 years imprisonment if she is extradited to the United States and convicted. Prosecutors have accused her of committing fraud by telling financial institutions that China's Huawei is not tied to a Hong Kong-based company, Skycom, which was allegedly selling U.S. goods to Iran in violation of U.S. sanctions against Tehran. Coming up, Australian students take to the streets against coal. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia, Taiwan is reinforcing its five-year-old ban on network equipment produced by Chinese companies Huawei and ZTE amid security concerns. Officials are seeking to reassure lawmakers and the public that such measures have been effective and the threat to communications sector is minimal. It's safe and fun to visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, fresh Chinese fruit by train, and school kids take on coal mining. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Farmers in Guangxi Province, China, are doing well 5 years after the base number one train started bringing their fruits to the country's northern provinces. The base number one train has reduced total travel time from Guangxi to Beijing to just 65 hours. Huang Feifei is a local farmer.
Marketing is no longer a problem for us, and the price is stable. For example, this year, the banana price is more than 4 yuan per kilogram. So for me, our income and living conditions have improved a lot.
With a subtropical climate, Guangxi is home to a wide array of fruits that can spoil easily when transported. To keep them fresh, fruit-selling companies use freezers with smart managing systems. Employees can track the fruits with GPS and adjust the temperature of the freezer via a real-time temperature monitoring system on their smartphone. He Yong Chen is the general manager of Guangxi Base No. 1 Agriculture Development Company.
Cold container transportation can help us lower our losses from 20% to 3%. And the cost of special train transportation is 20% lower than regular transportation by trucks.
China's Base No. 1 train has made more than 90 journeys and transported 25,000 tons of fresh produce from South China to Beijing since it began operation in 2013. Indian mining firm Adani is facing challenges in Australia as thousands of school kids take to the streets to call for a stop to their construction of a coal mine. Alia Bavik is a 14-year-old student.
This is a march against Adani, and we need action. We need to make sure that Adani doesn't go ahead, because we have 12 years to become carbon neutral. If we don't, it's going to be basically irreversible to stop dramatic climate change.
The Carmichael mine, slated to get underway in just weeks, will manage 10 to 15 million tons of coal a year and cost around $2 billion. The rallies, which erupted in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, and Cairns, follow protests last month where thousands of Australian students skipped school to demand the government take action on climate change. Sammy Lightfoot is a 13-year-old student.
School kids are the next generation of Australia. They are potentially the future leaders, so I think they should have the biggest voice and the biggest say in what their country does.
Spokespeople for Adani say the coal mine will revitalize the economy and create thousands of new jobs. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, a former Canadian diplomat who served as an envoy to Beijing and Hong Kong, has been detained in China amid rising tensions between the two countries over Canada's arrest at the request of the United States of a Chinese technology executive. Michael Kovrig was apprehended this week for undisclosed reasons. You'll find more at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, India's education system has long focused on academic achievement. But in an unusual initiative, the Delhi government has introduced a class of happiness in the city's public schools to turn the focus on emotional well-being. Educators hope the idea, influenced by its tiny neighbor Bhutan, will help reduce rising levels of stress and anxiety in a country that ranks low on the World Happiness Index. Anjana Pasricha visited a school in the Indian capital 5 months after the program was introduced to see how it's faring.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to...
Armed with a handbook for happiness, the teacher asks these sixth graders to close their eyes for a few minutes to learn how to spend time in the moment. Then he relates an inspirational story. Students participate enthusiastically. And soon it is time to move on to a fun activity, playing with a mock ball. After 5 months, the class of happiness that starts the day at public schools in Delhi has made school less stressful for many.
We had to immediately take out our books, concentrate on the blackboard, and try to grasp lessons. It was irritating to jump straight into studies. Now after the happiness class, I feel calmer and I can focus better on studies.
The happiness class will not lighten the pressure to get good grades. School bags, the symbol of a highly competitive system, are so heavy that the government recently introduced a weight restriction. The chase to make it to prestigious universities begins early.
After school, I study for a half hour, then attend coaching classes, then play for a while in the park, then study from 8 to 10, and then have dinner.
Delhi's education minister, who spearheaded the project in a rigid education system, hopes the new class will provide balance.
All over tension, all over burden, examination, anxiety, tension, then failure, success, all these keywords keep buzzing around in our minds and there was no happiness at all.
The happiness class has no grades or tests. Besides providing tools to cope with stress, it also aims to inculcate values such as telling the truth or not stealing. The story this teacher relates encourages students, many of who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, to keep faith in themselves. 5 months on, Kidar Singh has noticed a change.
They tell fewer lies. They have stopped skipping class. They sit down and focus better on studies. They also got less angry. They used to complain habitually to teachers about each other, but that has reduced.
Most educators agree that the focus on emotional well-being was long overdue for a generation coping with new challenges. The scale of the project makes Minister Sisodia optimistic.
The volume is the strength. 10 lakh students, 1 million students every morning in 20,000 classrooms sit together, do meditation, discuss about the happiness, discuss about the relationship, emotional science. It will help a lot in the society.
But educators caution that the project's success will depend on how individual teachers reach out to students. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Humans and gorillas are more similar than you might think. We share a strikingly similar genetic code. We both live in families. Both species have distinctive body odors. And as Faith Lapidus reports, we both occasionally cheat at games.
Maneuvering a peanut through a maze can be really challenging, especially if you're a gorilla. To keep their troop of endangered western lowland gorillas from getting bored, keepers at the Bristol Zoological Society set up a puzzle game for them. The apes need to guide a peanut through a series of obstacles by poking a stick through various holes to move it along. When the peanut reaches the bottom of the device, it drops out for them to eat. They've demonstrated some unexpected and distinctly human problem-solving abilities.
So one example for you is their ability to get the nut out by cheating. So we've seen a lot of cheating behavior going on where they've been putting their lips up against the device and sucking the nut out, which was not how we intended the device to be used. But it just shows you that they're very flexible, they're very capable of creating new solving strategies to access the food.
Developed by the zoo and the University of Bristol, the game is designed to encourage the gorilla's cognitive and puzzle-solving abilities.
The game's split up into different modules, and within each module there's a different puzzle. Now, some of these module puzzles require them to actually use tools in order to solve. They're removable, so we can take the modules out, redesign them, and put in an additional module or change the actual structure. So it creates an endless stream of new and novel puzzles for them to solve. On there.
It also integrates hidden computer technology and motion sensors that record how, when, and where the gorillas use it. Previously, that would have taken hours of human observation. The researchers hope more advanced models will help zookeepers better understand both the mental and physical condition of the gorillas.
Things like eyesight, hearing, other cognitive function, all of these could be measurable further on down the line.
Eventually, they'd like to offer the technology as an open-source cognitive enrichment tool for all zoos with great apes. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook streaming each and every day, as well as our website at voanews.com. We also stream in the old-fashioned way, you might say, on the radio. You can tune in to HELPS Radio at HELP University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, if you happen to be in the area. And if you're there, say hi to the Faculty of Communication who run the station. We say hi and thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Suleiman Tarawali, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a nice day.